What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 143, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something that gives us a little kickback and, of course, helps the podcast keep on going here, with me today is Derek. What's up, Derek?
Oh, not much, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's an interesting time for tech. We're hearing a lot of interesting stuff this week, especially CPU related, which we will get into in just a little bit.
Yeah. We're kind of building up for back to school stuff. So
back to school holiday stuff. Yeah.
Starting to see a few things pop out here.
Yeah. But it's raining, it's pouring here. Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, so we're getting, this is the last day of July. Where did the summer go, man?
Fast, real fast.
Yeah, real fast. For us, you know, in the Northeast, it gets a little cold here coming up. if you listen to this podcast for a while, you know we're not fans of it.
And you know we talk about the weather at like the start of every podcast. So.
Yeah, so I'm not complaining about the rain. Obviously, it's not snow or anything, and hopefully we don't get snow for a long time, but... Yeah. But yeah, so that's what's going on, guys. So we'll jump right into our reviews this week, and we have three really awesome products. We'll start it off with AMD's Ryzen 7 2700X. That's their current flagship processor in their mainstream desktop line. So this is an 8-core, 16-thread part that has a base clock of 3.7 gigahertz and boosts all the way up to 4.3 gigahertz. That's on 2 cores. And it's an awesome part. I mean, this is your second generation Ryzen, so you get a couple more features that are better, you know, more optimized now, like the auto overclocking is more optimized, and you get a little bit of bump in clock speeds and things like that. So from the previous generation, which would be the 1800X, you're going to see anywhere from like 7 to 14% performance increase, which is good. Which you can't expect to see this crazy increase because this is just a simple refresh. This is not, you know, this is not Zen 2 or anything like that.
This isn't Bulldozer to Zen or anything.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. $329.99 comes with actually a really good CPU cooler too. So, you know, on the Intel side with their Core i7 parts, you're not getting a CPU cooler or anything like that for the same price. But here you get a good CPU cooler that actually looks good too. They've loaded it out with RGBs and things like that. So that's one good thing about this is the price and what you get. I mean, you know, if you're building a new system, you're looking at either like a high-end CPU. If you're doing this processor, you're definitely looking at a high-end CPU cooler or an AIO, both of which cost, you know, at the low end on the CPU cooler would be $45. And at the high end on the AIO, you could go up to $200. So if you're kind of in a money crunch, you could just get it with the included CPU cooler and be good. And then when you get that extra money, you can go out and you know, buy that AIO or that higher end CPU cooler. As far as performance goes, it basically beats out Intel's top part right now, which is their Core i7 8700K. In pretty much everything, the Core i7 8700K does still beat it out in single-threaded performance. But again, this is an 8-core, 16-thread part. It has 2 more cores, so you expect it to do better in the multi-core performance there. Gaming, it's kind of mixed bag, but it's an improvement over the previous generation. So everywhere, every part, every benchmark or every area where the previous generation Ryzen did worse, this does less worse, if that makes sense. You know,
still doesn't look like it's not dominating any of the newer Intel parts, though. As far as gaming goes.
It's not. I mean, a lot of games, they're not multi-threaded as good. And it's just...
I'm certainly not going to take advantage of all of those cores. That's for sure.
Yes, especially the ones that we use because we're going back to, I mean, we have our, you know, 6700K in there, so we don't have the newest new games, right?
Right.
But we do have DX12 games and things like that in there. You know, so it's still, and if you look at the graphs, they're not far off, right?
Right.
I'm looking at Ashes of Singularity at 4K. The 8700 did 44.1 FPS compared to 42.6. So you're not necessarily losing a lot, but if you're looking to get the most out of your processor,
yeah,
I still think that the Intel processor is the way to go if you're looking for the absolute best FPS with your game. But if you're somebody like me and you as well, you know, you're exporting a lot of photos, which Adobe programs are incredibly multi-threaded and work awesome like that. And I use Premiere a lot and I'm exporting video. You're going to really want those, two extra cores. And yeah, I mean, if you look at the performance over the 8700K in our CPU tests, the multi-threaded ones, I mean, it's
pretty
the top dog. Yeah.
Fairly dominant in the multi-threaded Cinebench score.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a good processor, solid processor. Obviously it's their flagship, so you're going to expect really good performance. Overclocking wise, it is pretty good as well. We were a little limited in our testing just for the fact that, you know, we only have a Kraken X52 and this processor is a little bit hotter than the previous.
Is it?
Generation.
What's the TDP change?
It is 105.
Okay.
Yeah, 105 watts. But the it will start, unlike Intel chips, which you can burn for the most part, this will throttle when the temperature hits 85 C. Like, the CPU will throttle. I'm not sure if you can specifically turn that off in the BIOS. I honestly didn't look. But with Intel processors, like, you can legit burn them if you want.
Yeah. So some people would say it's better to let the processor just do its thing.
Yeah.
I prefer not to, but most of us just don't want our processors to die.
Yeah. So I think that this is a solid processor. It definitely currently right now on July 31st, it is the multi-threaded king of the mainstream desktop processor space. It just is.
Nice.
And again, you get a value with this too. You do get a good CPU cooler included with this. And that's going to save
always
you.
Always the value.
Yeah. You are going to save at least $50 off the bat there. You know, and like I said, so it's definitely something to think about. But I really like this processor. I think it's powerful enough. I would have no problem running this in a gaming rig or an encoding rig or any rig, really. It's just that good of a processor.
You'd actually buy it if you were just building a game-specific machine?
Yeah. Okay. It's a good processor. And again, you know, if I'm gaming, maybe I'm recording video too, and then I have to encode that. I mean, those two extra cores are going to save me time on encoding and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And the you know, the software now, the Ryzen Master software, that's where you control all of your frequencies and things like that. It's really good now from the, you know, initial Ryzen. There's no real issues. I didn't have any issues, stability issues or anything like that with this system. I ran it on a Asus X470 or X. Yeah. Wait. Yeah. X470. Okay. I always have to think because of all the chipsets are all,
they're so similar. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But yeah, so no issues really. Just a great, just a great processor, and it's a good flagship. And you know, so the biggest thing is if you're running Ryzen now, you're running an 1800X or even, you know, something from first gen Ryzen. Should you upgrade? I don't think you really need to at this point. The performance gain you're going to get isn't worth the price, right? But if you're running an older system, definitely this is a great part. And you know, right now it's just, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit later in the podcast, but I mean, it's Intel's turn to fight back. And we've been hearing rumors that, you know, for now this is the flagship part, but they do have a Ryzen 7 2800X, because it was weird. They went from an 1800X from the previous generation to a 2700X, not a 2800X. So, maybe they're waiting to see what Intel does and then they'll put that part out. Don't know.
Maybe holding that one in reserve.
Yeah, that's what the rumors are saying. So, for those wondering, it does have a soldered heat spreader too, so that definitely helps with temperatures too. unlike the Intel chips. So
right.
So yeah.
But it sounds like it needs it. Even I find it interesting that it's that much hotter, considering it's only the GDP is only 10 watts higher.
It runs,
it's interesting.
Yeah, it runs a little hotter. I don't know if that's just our chips specifically. I mean, you get chips
that sometimes happens.
I mean, we don't have multiple chips. Yeah. We don't have multiple chips to test.
Right.
Or anything like that. But again, I think it's a good chip. I think I would recommend it to anybody building a system these days. It's up there with the Core i7-8700K. If you're looking for in that category, you know, if somebody asked me which one to get, there's pros and cons on both of them. It's definitely something to, it's a chip to consider for sure. So we'll go from the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I guess, to a gaming monitor, which is sitting in front of me right now. It is the Viotech GN24C, which is a 24-inch curved 1080p 144Hz gaming monitor. And I think that 1080p 144Hz is great for a lot of reasons. A lot of people think, oh, like 1080p, I want 1440p or I want 4K. You're not going to be able to run those at 144Hz and get the frame rates unless you're rocking a really high-end graphics card. Most people, I think, you know, are running a 1070 area, you know? I mean, if you look at Steam and look at the Steam results, most people are running a 1070.
Yeah.
You know, so I think to push 144Hz or 144 frames a second on 1440p and especially 4K, you need something pretty...
You need a couple of pretty powerful cards.
Yeah, so for 1080p 144Hz, I think that's a great space. I think the price is good, especially for those users as well. And this is a good monitor. It comes from Viotech. Again, we've been reviewing a lot of their panels. And the biggest thing is that this panel marks all, like checks all the boxes. It's curved. It's a Samsung-made panel. It supports FreeSync. Again, that 144Hz refresh rate. It's $219.99, which I think is a good deal. It's listed as an Amazon Choice product, which means it has good reviews on Amazon as well. So that's from real people. And the only issue that I really had that a lot of people complained about with this one and the 27-inch 1440p panel was the stand. This stand is really wobbly. You don't notice it if it's on your desk, obviously, but when you're putting it together, you're like...
doesn't give you a lot of confidence that it's not falling over.
Yeah, I mean, with this size of a panel, it's not as big of a deal, I feel, but on bigger panels, I think it would be. But that is an issue. And what was really funny is the 27-inch that uses the exact same design and the exact same stand. That stand was sturdy. This one, not so much. So I don't know if it's like a manufacturing issue that they have or something like that. But that's the biggest complaint that I've seen on reviews and I've seen on user comments on this display. But it's a good display. I've been playing Fortnite on it and it's been awesome, especially at 144Hz. And it's really good. The only other issue, because of the size of the panel, the menu buttons are on the bottom of the monitor, and when you press it actually moves the monitor so that it's uneven. That's annoying, but if you're not touching those buttons that much, it's not a big deal.
But you really shouldn't outside of initial setup.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that if you're somebody who like sets the gaming setting or the FPS setting, which really brings out the whites, and like the FPS setting is not something you want to use on a daily basis for just daily tasks, at least in my opinion. Yeah. You might be switching back between those. So that's the only thing. And for some reason, this has a weird power adapter. It doesn't have like your normal power connection like most monitors do. I know a lot of bigger panels have a power adapter, right? Because they need the extra.
External power block.
Yeah, power brick. But this one, I don't imagine it does. And it, you know, the 27-inch had a normal power connection. This one doesn't. Well, it's, so that's
144Hz though.
So is the 27.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Yeah, So, yeah, it's weird. I don't know if this is like an older design, but maybe all that means...
Maybe there wasn't enough room in the panel.
That could be true as well. What that means is that if that breaks or you lose it somehow, you're going to have to buy one from them, or it's just harder to, you know, a normal power cable is a normal power cable.
I guess all I'm thinking is like, we've had power bricks for years. It's been mostly okay.
Yeah. I just think that, I'm a huge fan of like a standardized cable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's plenty
when it comes to when it comes to the product.
There's so many things that have an external power brick. I don't think anything of it usually.
Gotcha. But it, like, again, performance wise, it's a good panel. It looks great. I didn't have any issues, no screen tearing, nothing like that. I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, a lot of Fortnite on it. It's a good display. It's a good price. It's, you know.
Have you played? You got testing on here. You said, did you play anything more graphically demanding?
I
guess what I'm thinking is you're playing a couple of games that don't push the 1080p. You know what I mean? Like, those games aren't going to look bad at 1080p because they're designed to look good on lower end hardware. I'm just curious at this point in time, like 1080p, I feel is maybe it's just getting used to other displays, but it's just so it's too blocky at this point.
Yeah, like, well, I think that I find it, at least. Yeah, I think that these games are obviously good for 1080p.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for something that's really going to push something harder, I mean, Overwatch actually pushed. I mean, I have a 1080 Ti and running at 144 hertz. I mean, it pushes it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that at the end of the day, I mean, the panel is going to display what it's going to display. I don't think that the panel has anything to do with the quality of the game. You know what I mean?
No, I guess I don't. The resolution is going to impact the way it's gonna display.
Correct.
Like, it's gonna affect how smooth the game looks, and like a game that is designed that already looks somewhat jaggy as it is because of the art style isn't going to be affected as badly by using a lower resolution monitor, I guess.
I get what you're saying. I honestly think all games are designed to look good in most resolutions. I still think that if you look at the Steam, what is that called? The Steam results, you know, most people are using 1080p displays still. And I think most games are, while games are designed, I think at the highest resolution possible, obviously. When they're scaled down, I still don't think they look bad.
It's not like it breaks the game or it makes objects within the game look badly. It's more of the way it displays it. The blockiness, pixelation, etc.
I honestly, at least in the games that I've played over the course of a few years, I've never really noticed that.
Because I notice it on my 4K monitor that when you have 4K running, it's so much smoother. You almost don't need anti-aliasing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a big difference. Like, testing like Star Wars Battlefront 2, running the same path through something that we do at our graphics card reviews, like doing it in 1080 and then doing it in 4K, huge difference,
right?
Huge difference. But obviously, again, somebody looking at this display has the hardware to run it and is looking for that. I mean, I think this
looking
is
looking for the speed.
Yeah, looking for the speed. I think FPS gamers need this speed. You know, we reviewed a good at least three 144 hertz panels in the past 2 months, and you know, everybody talking about these displays are the Counter-Strike Source, the Overwatch, the Fortnite, you know, all those professional players playing that style of game, because you need the fast movement. Like, it's just and obviously if you haven't played it at 144 hertz, like, it is a big difference. It's a noticeable difference. Going from 60 to 144 is pretty pretty awesome. So yeah, like I said, this display is great. If you're not looking for those extras, we talked about this in the other Viatech reviews, like you have no height adjustment on this. You don't have like a USB 3.0 hub or anything like that. The stand is kind of, you know, but you're getting it at a good price and it is a good panel. And the most important thing is performance, and it does have good performance.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, actually, of checking out these off-brand, offbeat monitors. If you just got the cash, sure, the Samsungs and Samsungs, I guess, LG, other big brand monitors, Dells are going to be nice, and you'll appreciate them. But if you want to save a few bucks and you're willing to put up with like a little bit chintzier of a build quality, the panels themselves are basically the same, so yeah, you're not losing anything. Just, I mean, and at that point, if you don't like the stand, say, on yours, and it's really a problem, just buy an external mounted stand, an aftermarket one.
Yeah,
you're saving that money to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, this display has a VESA adapter, so you can pretty much get any, you know, yeah, monitor arm or whatever for this. So yeah, definitely worth considering if you're looking to kind of upgrade your monitor situation, especially if you're an FPS gamer. Definitely worth checking out. So
for sure.
And then also talking about gaming, we have what I would say, although I haven't taken a look at a lot of headsets lately, so but the best $50 gaming headset money can buy. It's that good, and I'm incredibly impressed.
Those cups look cush.
They are, so we'll talk about, the headset is the Cougar Phantom, and it's a stereo headset, 53 millimeter drivers, a lot of big booming bass in there, steel design on the headband there, and it has some of the biggest ear cups or ear pads, yeah, that I've ever seen on a gaming headset, but that's the important thing, because they said that they designed this headset, they said it's created for those who want to enjoy great audio in long gaming sessions.
Right.
And that's the important thing. I played 2.5 hours a gaming session, and then obviously longer than that editing video, and no issues. A lot of times, we've tested, you know, over the years, a lot of different gaming headsets. You either get some type of irritation on your head where the headband is, or either on the, like, the right around your ears from the ear cups. That just happens over time. With this, no issues at all. And it has a very long cable, which I'm a fan of as well. We see a lot of these gaming headsets. I mean, this cable is at least, with the PC adapter, is at least 10 feet long.
Nice.
And I have my PC, like, up on a shelf. So that's, I'm a fan of that, too.
Yeah.
And it, the sound is really good. I mean, it sounds really good. 53 millimeter drivers give you that kind of oomph that you want, but the bass is not overdone, which I like. It's a good headset for gaming. It really is. The included microphone, so the microphone's removable. You can adjust it, obviously. We have an audio clip in the review that you guys can listen to as you listen to me talking into the microphone, and it sounds good. It's an unedited file, so you can listen to it. And it will get the job done. It's obviously not the best microphone on a headset. I think the Sennheiser really has that kind of, like, they have the best one out there, but that headset's like $200.
Yeah.
So for $50, I think that you're getting an extremely comfortable headset that sounds really good, that's basically universal too. So you have a single audio connection, and then you have the PC adapter, which gives you the microphone and headphone. But the single, you can use it for any console. You can use it for your mobile device. They actually give you a second set of ear cups that are smaller, if you wanted to use this for, say, a mobile device or something like that. The headset doesn't sound as good with those, with the smaller ear cups. Mm-hmm. The bigger ear cups is where it's at. The bigger ear cups also give you a little bit of like sound dampening properties of the outside noise, which is good. So you kind of can get more immersed in your game. But honestly, super impressed with this headset.
Nice.
It's just a good headset, and I don't say that often. It's a headset that I'm using right now, so I haven't, like, so many times when I review headsets, like, I'm like, okay, testing it, I'll use it for a couple weeks, and then as soon as I'm done, I'm like, I gotta get back to my other headset, which is the HyperX Cloud Alpha, which is $100, and it's pretty much the best headset, gaming headset out there, in my opinion. It's just super comfortable, amazing quality, amazing sound. This is $50 cheaper, sounds really good, not as good, but it sounds really good. It's super comfortable too, so the Cloud Alpha I can wear for hours, same thing with this one. So I'm still using it, and it's awesome. And it's a great value at $50. Like, you can't really beat it, you know. And for those people who hate RGBs and lighting, there's no lighting on this headset. There's none of that crap. You know, I like it that it's not a USB, you know what I mean? It's a stereo, so it can be used on multiple devices.
Looks great. It looks like the proper amount of minimal, and then the maximum ear cups look fantastic.
These are huge, but that's for a purpose, you know what I mean?
Of course.
So great. Like I said, one of the better headsets I've reviewed. Like, I haven't reviewed that many lately, but definitely if you're looking in this price range, this will probably be my number one recommendation for you, because they're that good. And again, it's nice that you can use them on multiple devices, you know what I mean, because it is a stereo headset. So you know, if you like these that much and you're going on a trip, you can use these on the plane or whatever. You know they're going to be comfortable for a long period of time too. So
awesome.
Definitely. So yeah, that brings us to Case Mod Friday, and of course that is where we feature a build or mod that's been done in the community. And this week we have a really interesting build, scratch build, for the themed after the FIFA World Cup, which was going on. Was it 2 weeks ago now, or was it last week?
No, it was. It was 2 weeks. I wanted to say it was 3 weeks, but it was 2 weeks.
And this one is done, and sorry if I butcher your name, by Suchow Modian Design. He's done a lot of amazing scratch builds, some that we have featured, and it's featured like the World Cup trophy, or designed like the World Cup trophy. And I think that the tubing on it is pretty cool. I don't know. You're the water cooling guy. What do you think?
I think it's pretty cool. It's pretty sick. It's great. I think it's one though that looks really good at first glance, and then it's still pretty cool after you start to analyze it. I mean, it mirrors the World Cup pretty well, so that's pretty cool. The tubing comes out of the base. I don't even know how many different, well, two per side on a, is that a six sides?
Ten?
No.
10 or 12.
Yeah. 12. Individual.
I think 10.
I think there's. I'm guessing they're just like linked together and they circulate up and down because there's no need for them to actually connect that many individual things, or they're not even.
Yeah.
It's hard to even see if they're even functional, but like the tubing wraps and curls up around the middle of what would be the trophy and wraps around it, and it does do a really good job of imitating the World Cup trophy.
Yeah, so. At least one of those has to be active. Or something.
I would say two of them, at least,
there is that RGB water block from is in the top. So there is I would guess an ITX system in the top.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because there's lots of things that can do with this. It's a World Cup trophy, but then it's set on a big black base, which is basically just is it a thermal take case? Or is it just a box? I don't know.
I think it's just a box.
But it's large enough to house a PC all by itself, so.
Yeah, I think the power supply's in there.
Definitely the power supply. You can see
that. Yeah, the power supply is actually shown. Yeah, so the power supply's in there. I don't know what else is in there. But the motherboard is definitely
in there. You easily have the GPU in the bottom.
Yeah.
With a ribbon cable, of course. Because it's got a big rectangular block connecting the two pieces. So you could run just about anything through the middle of that you needed to. Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. It's very unique. It's a It's a good in the moment mod.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a fan of it. I think it's different. And this guy does a lot of good scratch builds.
Yeah. I'm guessing he 3D printed the continent shapes pieces that cover the outside of it.
They look like they're 3D printed.
Yeah. Pretty good job.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. I think it's cool. It's very unique and, like you said, in the moment. So yeah. Definitely worth checking out.
I think the thing that kind of like loses me on it is that there's not much more to see beyond the outside of it. You really can't see into it. You can't see like what it's doing or what the components are really. So yeah, that's the only unfortunate thing.
It would be cool if like the top pieces were like kind of had like a door and you could like open
like
them
hinge,
up.
Like
yeah.
Kind of like that Inwin case that or transformed apart or whatever you want to call it. That'd be pretty cool if this kind of egged open.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. But I think it's still, I think it's really cool. I don't think we've ever had a soccer theme mod on here.
I don't think so. There's got to be more of them too.
Oh yeah, I mean,
considering it's the world sport.
Yeah, it's the most watched sport in the world, so. But yeah, really cool. Definitely check it out. And if you don't like this one, we have a full section of case mods in the Case Mod Friday category on the site. So you can just go through and just go nuts and look at a ton of mods. So that brings us to news this week. And we have a lot of stuff, a lot of CPU stuff. You know, we talked about talking about a review of the Ryzen 7 2700X that it's, you know, Intel's turn to kind of fight back, right? To fight back against that.
And I think this generation is the one, too, where they really need to fight back because they released the generation that was them just trying to keep pace with AMD's rush forward. And now this should be the one where it's, okay, here's a real part for competition for you.
Yeah. So, by all accounts, Intel will be releasing an 8-core 16-thread part in the mainstream desktop segment. It'll be the first one, you know, like the i7-8700K was the first 6-core.
Yeah.
So they're going to go from 6-core to
In the matter of a year, 2 years, we've gone from 4-cores to 8-cores.
Yeah. But this will be a Core i9. So the flagship product in that will be the Core i9-9900K. Again, 8-core, 16-thread, base clock of 3.6 gigahertz. It will boost all the way up to 5 gigahertz. So the 5 gigahertz will be on 1 to 3 cores when you get that boost.
Yeah.
16 megabytes of L3 cache. 16 PCI. All of these chips have 16 PCI Express lanes. And this is the interesting thing. 95 watt TDP. Not sure how they're doing that.
For all the parts.
Yeah, for all the parts.
Interesting.
So that will be the new flagship part. This is 14 nanometer plus. So it's the third refinement of Skylake, basically. Yeah,
because they're struggling to get smaller than that.
Yeah, so the next part is the Core i7-9700K. And what's interesting, we'll talk about it, but it's interesting, this is 8-core, 8-thread, so no hyper-threading on this.
On a 9700K, which traditionally we have hyper-threading.
On an i7 part, which is interesting.
Right.
You know, so again, we're getting the Core i9 extension in the mainstream desktop space. Haven't had it before. It was only reserved for the high-end desktop.
Yes.
So keep that in mind. So that is 3.6 gigahertz and will boost all the way up to 4.9 gigahertz. You move down from the L3 cache from 16 megabytes to 12 megabytes. Same PCI Express lanes, which is 16, and same. All these chips have 95 watt TDP, and they all give you 16 PCI Express lanes. And then finally, we have the Core i5-9600K. And again, this is 6-core, 6-thread. So again, no hyper-threading. 3.7 gigahertz with a boost up to 4.6 gigahertz and only 9 megabytes of L3 cache. So basically what Intel is doing is that the Core i9 extension will be 8-core, 16-thread parts. So that the Core i9 will be the only one that gives you hyper-threading, which is kind of, I don't know, it's weird because Core i7 was like the...
That was the flagship part for mainstream. I think that they've just done a branding shift here. They've pulled the i9 down into the series and they've shifted everything forward. Really, I mean, that i5 is basically an i3.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it.
So basically, Core i9 will be 8-core, 16-thread. Core i7 will be 8-core, 8-thread. And then Core i5 will be 6-core, 6-thread.
I think a much more interesting i7 part would have been the 6-core, 12-thread part.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, other than it is rebranding, but they're trying to create the stigma that you're getting more with that i9, but you're really not. I'm also concerned that means they're going to really be reaching for price with that part.
Yeah. It's
a tempting part. The 16 PCI Express lanes is, obviously it's limited to that, but that's the big thing that holds you, that makes this not a high-end desktop part, essentially.
Yes.
I'd also, again, I think you lack the bandwidth, right? But it'd be nice to have quad channel memory as well. We're getting to the point where you could use that.
Yeah. That's obviously limited. And obviously they're going to keep that for the high-end desktop segment.
Right, right.
It's just, the lines are getting so blurred with this. It's with the Core i9 in the mainstream, you know? And again, what's the price going to be?
I think it's going to be.
You think they're going to break 400?
I think so. Because traditionally, that i7 part would have been right around 350, 340, 350?
349.
Yeah.
329, 349.
Yeah, somewhere in there, depending on what they end up doing. But, like, I bet it's a 390. I bet that's what the i9 is.
Yeah.
Which brings you really close. Really, I mean, it's still a little bit of a jump for some people, but it's pretty close to just going low end, high end desktop.
Yeah, it's just
other than board know. Motherboard costs, I guess.
And like you would think they would throw in a Core i7 with hyper threading that's still a 6-core 12-thread part like the 8700K currently is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like you've essentially
Go ahead, sorry.
No, you're fine. I think you're gonna say what I was one of the things I was thinking.
Or they'll have like a i9 that's a 6-core 12-thread.
I was gonna guess they're gonna come out with a special edition part at some point. In between runs, they've probably got a 6-core 12-thread part and they're gonna like this is blah 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 part and it's for a limited release.
Yeah,
and that'll be like in between this and the next.
It's just like I still feel this is kind of rushed, obviously because it's on 14 nanometer still. You know what I mean?
They're just stuck there. Well, according to all the rumors we've seen, they're just stuck there. They're having a whole lot of trouble shrinking.
Yeah, that and the fact that it's just like the constant rebranding is just...
It's like they don't think we noticed or something, which I suppose in all reality there are people who do not know and they do not notice,
and it's just like everything that they're doing, like I mean if you remember when the core or the high-end desktop we had like quad core parts and then they like a year later those are completely discontinued, like it's just
we went for like 10 years with quad cores. couldn't get past it all of a sudden it's 6 cores and 8 cores.
Yeah, but it's just like this thing, I don't know.
Speeds are still the same too.
Yeah.
We really haven't seen per core performance increase much at all.
I mean, you really can't when you're on the same you can't when you're on the same size, you can't same expect die, that yeah. much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like oh man. But we'll see. These are rumored to come out tomorrow. I haven't heard anything like that. The rumor to come out August 1st. So
like a release August 1st? Like I can make a purchase?
I have no clue. I haven't heard anything. I would give you more of a hint if I did, but I don't.
Yeah.
The thing is, too, is, you know, we'll talk about it, but I mean, AMD just released their new chipset, which came out today. Their middle range chipset. So, you know, for motherboard manufacturers, we haven't seen any leaks, really.
Motherboard manufacturers tend to not be able to keep things under wraps.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard lists of what's going to be for the new chipset, which again we'll talk about. It'll be the Z390, which will support these. We've heard lists, but we haven't seen any pictures. We haven't seen any leaked things. And like, if it launches tomorrow, there should be something, you would think.
Yeah.
I think if anything, there'll be an announcement tomorrow. If that again, that's just a rumor that everybody's talking about is tomorrow. So I don't
know. It's an awfully random date.
Yes.
To be launching. Well, time period more than anything, not so much the date. It's just like, what is this? This is 100% in between everything right now.
Yeah. But also, talking about this, another rumor that has come out is that the 8-core part, the i9-9900K, will have a soldered IHS, which is something enthusiasts have been asking for Intel for the longest time.
And doing themselves for the longest time.
And this might be the reason why you're going to get that 5 gigahertz, honestly. The i7-8700K when overclocked is extremely hot. Mm-hmm. Even normal running temperatures were pretty warm on that processor. So that's a step in the right direction. All the Ryzen chips are, you know.
Yeah.
So with
that low-ish TDP, you still are going to need something to hit that kind of speed with that concentration of cores under the same die.
Yeah. So that's a plus if it does happen. You know what I mean? So that's another rumor that's going around. And then finally, the first benchmarks of this processor have appeared. And it's the only one that we've seen, so there's that as well. You would think there'd be a lot more if it launches tomorrow. This one was done by a professional overclocker, Tom Apsek, maybe? That's how you say his last name. He's a Thai professional overclocker, and this was just done in TimeSpy, 3D Mark TimeSpy. And the thing we're concentrating on is the CPU score. It scores 10,719, which is about 2,500 points off from the Core i7-8700K, and only 1,500 points it's 1,500 points higher than the Ryzen 7 2700X. So it does beat the Ryzen 7 2700X.
1,500 points is a pretty substantial-ish margin. It's a pretty good jump. That's a pretty good leap. It's gonna all be about price, though.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
You know what? No, I still think that this is $390 part. That i9 is a $390 part because that's what the 2700X $325, I think.
The 2700X is $329.
$60 more. What is that, roughly 10% improvement in this test?
Yeah.
Ish, 10%-ish. Yeah. Maybe even 400 then. But I'm still going to stick by my 390.
And for those who think this might be fake, the processor wasn't recognized. That's another thing too. It's like this came out on the 30th yesterday.
Yeah.
And the processor still isn't recognized by 3D Mark, which gets that stuff before. The system info. So
I don't see an in-channel release tomorrow. There's just not been enough talk yet.
There's a lot
more involved to have these parts available by tomorrow.
Yeah, this was a chip that was not recognized, but was 3.1 gigahertz base. And it boosted up to 5 gigahertz. So, good to see that Intel will hopefully, this is a chip that they'll be firing back with. You know, and it's it, I like the back and forth.
Oh, the tit for tat is incredible for us.
Yes, for us consumers. Yeah. It just seems so fast, but I guess that's a good thing. You know.
It seems really, what it seems a little too fast for me is motherboard manufacturers and motherboard tech, because they're getting a lot of their R&D is going to have to be focused into getting new boards out, and not, and some of that's going to be pulling people away because it's happening so quickly with both companies and the different, you know, between the high end and the mainstream lines. Like, you can't tell me that they're not losing manpower for developing new motherboard features in tech.
Correct.
So I feel like the boards are kind of stagnant. Do you feel the same way?
Yes. The board tech is kind of stagnant. The chipset features specifically, you're not getting a lot more. You're not getting a lot more generation to generation as you previously did. Like, you know, the next generation of motherboards meant better, like, connectivity options and things like that, you know. We're not seeing a lot of that.
A lot less bang for your buck, kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same board rehashed almost, and that's kind of what we're getting into. But the motherboard manufacturers have to do that to release their products on time, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, they're getting slammed. Those guys are probably exhausted, to be honest.
Yeah.
With all this, because it's just, it's back to back to back, you know, designing and I even feel like the schemes, the layouts are kind of staying the same, a bit the same in between these. And usually we see pretty radical changes, but they're staying fairly similar. So I would say even the graphics people are getting, the design people are probably getting a little burned out on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're so accustomed to these lines and they all looking the same. That, yeah, everything's kind of the same. So it kind of sucks if you're a motherboard enthusiast, because I know I am, and, like, I always would like to see that new line come out or something like that. And yeah, you're just kind of not getting that anymore.
No time for it.
Yeah. But something that you will have to wait for, at least according to AMD CEO Lisa Su, was they had their Q2 2008 investors call, and people were asking, when will we see an 8-core... 16 core Ryzen desktop processor. So this is going to happen. There has been rumors going around about a 16 core desktop processor in the mainstream desktop line. So that's basically doubling the core count, which is pretty crazy if you think about it. She said that the rollout of 7-nanometer Ryzen. So again, you can see that, you know, in 2019, AMD is going to be on 7-nanometer, which is pretty crazy. Will only come after the launch of 7-nanometer EPYC, which is their super AI type processor. Will only come after that. So basically, that means that, you know, Intel is going to fire this shot, this 8-core, and a lot of people want AMD to shoot something back, thinking that it's going to be the 16-core, but that's not going to happen until 2019.
It'll probably be the 2800X.
If they shoot back, it's going to be a 2800X.
Yeah, if that part can beat it. Otherwise, I don't think they'll bother to launch it.
Yeah. So this will definitely be Zen 2, and it's definitely not going to come till 2018. But that's crazy to think about. You know, going from just like you said, quad core parts, 4-core parts is what we had forever.
Yes.
And now, 2 years later, so 2019, we possibly will see 16 cores on the desktop, on the mainstream desktop.
Thanks to competition.
Yeah.
We were quadrupling, which, I mean, we're not big into coding, but I imagine software developers are now getting with the program, you know, starting to write these hugely multi-threaded lines that we need for this to really take advantage of these extra cores, because we need our games and we need all of our other processes to take advantage of it as well, not just heavily encoding stuff or high encoding stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's definitely going to push that realm of things as well, which is obviously good for us.
I mean, a standard 16 core for regular desktop, like, that opens up so many possibilities.
Now, the only
from a software point of view.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about with that is, like, will it keep it in the mainstream desktop price range? Again, right now the 8-core 16-thread part is $329.
I think it will.
I mean,
you can't price your customers out of the market.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you're going to give me 16 cores, what is that, 32? Yeah, 32 threads for under 400, I'm a really happy camper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something to think about, obviously later in 2019, but very cool. Something that's coming out very soon is AMD's Threadripper 2 2990X. That's their high-end desktop processor. 32-core, 64-thread, beast. It was listed on Canadian e-tailer, Canada Computers. It was listed for 2,399 Canadian, which converts to about 1,850 USD. It's not their official product page because it shows the older packaging. I don't think they'll keep the same packaging, right? Possibly.
Probably a template they were putting together.
Yeah. But what's interesting, it does show the TDP of 250 watts. The other listing that came out a couple weeks ago showed 180. So we're not sure on that. But it looks like this will be close to the final price of it. So still, you know, $1,850. 32-core, 64-thread, that's a decent price, I feel.
It's a really, really nice price.
Yeah. So that's definitely something to look at. We'll be updating you when, obviously, that is released. But the big thing this week on the AMD space is they did announce their B450 chipset. So this, you know, if you were looking for Ryzen 2 specifically, and you're looking to get a new board, the only board option you had in the newer boards was the X470. The X470 is the high-end, you know, just like the X370 on Intel. It's the high-end one. It's the more expensive boards, things like that. But now we finally have the B450 chipset. And basically, the only thing you lose is multi-GPU support, you know. And compared to Intel's B360, you still get memory overclocking and you still get CPU overclocking, which is pretty cool for this. So if you're running a single graphics card, you know, there's a lot of boards. We have links to all the new boards that came out from all the big manufacturers. There's a bunch. It's a more affordable motherboard. Motherboards should range from $70 to $160. So again, not terribly expensive. So yeah, I think it's a good chipset. It does have the same features as the X470. It allows lower TDP power draw, so like the actual board runs cooler, and it has improved CPU VRM memory wiring as well. And it does support like the XFR2 enhanced and the precision boost overdrive like X470 does too. So you have all those great features. A ton of boards came out. We'll be having our reviews of some of those boards coming up next week. So it's good. It's good for people looking to save some money. Good for people who aren't thinking about running multiple graphics cards and don't need, you know, all of those extra PCI Express things, you know?
Yeah. Which is so many people, really.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's great. All the boards that came out today look good too. There's a lot of good boards that were announced today. So definitely something to consider if you're looking to build a Ryzen system. And talking about AMD versus Intel, we've basically been talking about it this entire podcast. you know, because all the releases and things like that is AMD, their new ads that are at the San Jose airport, which is when you fly into Silicon Valley, you either fly into SFO or San Jose, typically San Jose. Their new ads for their EPYC processors, which are, again, their, you know, supercomputing processors, the AI processors, they basically just take shots at the Intel Xeon processors. One of them says, Xeon rolled, so did dinosaurs. Other one says, Xeon isn't epic, and with a picture of a dog versus a lion?
Tiger.
Tiger? The other one says, don't trust a relic, be epic. And it shows a picture of a Xeon processor, and it's pretty, shots were fired.
It's early shots, it feels like. I guess for companies, though, this is about when you're going to start looking at something like that. So.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And again, it's a pretty big shot because it's, you know, it's in Silicon Valley too. It would be interesting to see if Intel would put these up at AMD headquarters, which is in Texas. Would be very interesting. But I like stuff like this. I think it's fun. I think it's it gives us something to talk about other than like releases and all that. And again, the battle between these two companies only helps us consumers. So I think that's pretty awesome.
And it seems to be only heating up as well.
Yes.
So that's great.
We did talk about Z390 briefly, but that's the chipset that will be for those mainstream Core i9 parts and the 9th generation Core processors. Asus, a list was discovered of their upcoming Z390 boards. And again, no pictures, nothing like that, but we do have... all the boards listed there. So you'll get your Maximus 11 or XI series. You'll get your Z396, the Z390 Prime, Z390 Tough, and Z390 Dragon. For those wondering about the Dragon, that's designed for e-cafes and things like that. It's not like some new crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'll get at least 19 motherboards in the Z390 line from Asus.
Basically all the standard stuff we're using.
Yeah, all the stuff. There's nothing that really stands out that's different here. So, cool stuff there. So it's definitely something to, you know, again, if you're looking to upgrade maybe your two generations back on Intel, I'd wait a little bit.
Definitely not the time right now.
Yeah, because if you remember, the performance increase that if we noticed on, you know, from testing, a quad core to a 6 core, you're going from a 6 core to an 8 core now. Definitely worth waiting, I would say, for sure. So
yeah, and yeah. Even if you're okay with 6 core, like wait, because prices are going to come down.
Yes,
almost
yes,
certainly,
for sure. In other news, Logitech has acquired Blue Microphones, which you use a Blue microphone, do you not?
Yeah, speaking into the identical one of the photo right there now.
Yeah, so of course, everybody knows Logitech. If you don't, I don't know where you've been. But if you don't know Blue Microphones, I used to use one. They're great. They're really great quality. They just seamlessly work. I never really had any issues. I still have one here. I've never really had any issues with them.
They're excellent, like, plug and play.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure most podcasts you listen to, a lot of people use them. Although we have seen, like, you know, Razer came out with their professional one. Shure has a one that's, like, made for PCs now and stuff like that. But, you know.
Blue's the standard, though.
Yeah, Blue is kind of the standard. So, not sure how much it was or anything like that. It wasn't really listed in their press release. You know,
two good companies, though. Both companies focus on quality. That's really good.
Yeah, and so I don't know if they're going to operate separately. You know.
Probably creating synergies of some sort.
Yeah.
Both with purchasing and manufacturing, and then probably... But they're probably going to steal some technology back and forth, too.
It would be kind of cool to get some kind of Blue Mic Tech and like a Logitech gaming headset. Some Blue Mic Tech in the webcams that Logitech makes, because those microphones out there aren't that great. You know, stuff like that. I think would be cool, you know. So yeah, it's it definitely was surprising when I read this, and this came out today, so definitely really surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And then we definitely included this story for you, Derek, because you're our water cooling expert. XSPC has announced their TX series radiators, which they say they're the world's thinnest available PC radiators, 20.5 millimeters thick, super, super thin, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're extremely thin.
And these are, what's it called? These are copper and brass core, which is obviously better than aluminum, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And
brass not so much, copper great.
And they use they increase their fin density on these to 22 fins per inch. So this is definitely something that wasn't just made just because. I feel like it was more thought out. And the fins extend into the end piece there, so there's more fins down there as well. What do you think from a water cooler's perspective on this?
XSPC's radiators are actually pretty decent. They're cost effective. I don't know where they save the money, probably in the manufacturing process. They probably aren't as high quality as someone like EK or Alpha Cool, but they're like a great brand to get you into it. And they really do perform really well. The RX series is like, it's been like the gold standard for like entry level performance radiators. Now these are even, these TXs are even thinner than your standard AIO radiator, which is usually like 24, 27, somewhere in there. So I think that this is aimed to kind of get you back, because cases are getting, generally smaller, right?
Yeah.
We're shrinking the case sizes overall and significantly. So yeah, you pair that with a 15 millimeter fan and you're good to go. You know, you're thinner than your standard sized aftermarket water cooling radiator. So, performance wise, we'll see.
Yeah. That's the thing I worry about.
The radiators included in AIOs are not like known to be high performance. So we'll see. Of course they increase the fin density. You can't not, like, when you're going that thin, you need those fins. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe we'll talk to them, see if we can get one to test it.
Yeah, that'd be definitely be cool to have one and see kind of the performance differences between. It would be nice to get all three. Test them all together. That would be, you know, to see the difference performance with those three. For sure. On the gaming side of things, Elgato, who was just acquired by Corsair 2 weeks ago, I forget. They just announced their Stream Deck Mini Studio Controller. This thing is just smart, and it's awesome, and it looks great. Basically, the Stream Deck, they have a larger one, which I believe is 12 keys. But these are customizable LCD keys, basically buttons on a little deck thingy that you can customize what they look like, which is awesome. You can make them whatever you want. And this is made for streamers. So when you're streaming and doing stuff, you don't want to have to go into a menu. And then obviously if you're streaming with one monitor, you can't, like, it's going to mess up the stream. You just press a button and it does whatever you want. It's cool because they're customizable. So you can make them like look whatever you want. You know what I mean? Great for streamers. I believe this is $100.
That's great. It's a good price. And it simplifies, you know, a product that's already been out that is typically like kind of a headache for the new streamer to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, this gives you 6 buttons. The software I hear is really good. The Elgato software that I've used for their capture devices works really well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, if you're getting into streaming, you've kind of gone past the I think I'm going to stream and I'll do it once a week, like, you know, you're streaming on a constant basis. This is something you want to put some money, you know, it's $100. It's like, you know, you spend $100-$150 on that nicer microphone, and now the next thing is to get that something to help you control your stream better. This is it. So
put up your in between screens, your ads, maybe if you're that far along.
Yeah,
just simplify your life this way. I like this because describing it as an LCD button is kind of oversimplifies it. It looks like it's an actual button with an LCD screen inside each of the 6 buttons. So it's not that it's like a single touch screen that's split into six quadrants. It's physical buttons, which is, I think, important because you're still streaming. You're not really wanting to divide your attention that much. So this lets you maintain your stream and still do what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Super, super cool.
Slick little part.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely check that out. So that came out. And then finally, you know, the one thing I felt EA did right, which isn't a lot of things, is they had their On the House program, which gave you a game for a limited amount of time. If you added it to your library, you got it. It was nice. You know, some of the games were older, but still, like, a game you played years ago that you wanted to replay through, you could easily, you know, add it to your library and just check it out whenever you wanted to.
Well, it's free. Why not grab it, right?
Yeah, it's a free game. At the end of the day, it's a free game. They decided to cancel the program, which doesn't make any sense. And they canceled it the same day they announced their new Origin Access Premiere tier.
It's Origin pay to play just a slight bit earlier than everyone else.
Yeah, Origin Access Premier program. The Premier gives you immediate access to game launches 5 days before they release. So if you're a huge fan of EA games, this costs $14.99 a month or $100 a year.
It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Obviously,
it's gonna sell.
EA makes their money off of DLC and season pass things and all that, and this is just another extension of that. But the thing that I don't get is, yeah, like, that's cool, but like, why would you axe one nice thing that gets people, one that might get people an Origin, right? If you have never,
you gotta have Origin.
If you've never bought an EA game, right, you don't have Origin, but then you see, oh, there's this On the House thing where I can get a free game, I'm gonna download Origin and get that free game, right?
Yeah.
In their ecosystem. Yeah, and then you're in the ecosystem. So I don't know why they canceled it. These two programs have nothing to do with each other. Yeah.
They're just done giving stuff away.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all I see here.
You won't lose your games if you've already got them through the On the House program. If you try to go to the website, you're redirected to an Origin Access website. So it has been canceled, which kind of sucks. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Go ahead and get your Origin On the House. $15 a month. Such a deal.
Yeah.
You get 5 full days ahead of time.
Yep, that's
I don't understand this.
Are people really
playing that many EA titles that you're gonna pay a monthly subscription to get 5 days early access?
I think people who are hardcore into a specific franchise, i.e. Battlefield, might.
Yeah, but like, what you're gonna, it's a monthly charge.
Yeah. I mean,
why is it not just like a one-time fee to get that specific game early?
I think the higher end version of the highest, I don't know what the highest end version of Battlefield 5 or Battlefield.
Yeah, you can pay for early access.
Yeah, so you can, that can be, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who is this person that is playing every EA title that comes out and needs it 5 days early?
I don't know. I think this is something for their kids to tell their parents to buy
them.
This
is silly. This is as dumb as loot boxes, honestly.
Yeah. So
I'm sick of early access and like beta access games being sold. It's dumb.
I'm a fan of like the early
betas, but not paying for them.
I'm a fan of early access to help us build the game, right?
I'm not a fan of paying for somebody to continue to develop a game for eternity because they never finish them.
That's
when they
true.
Go early access, they never finish the game. You're just paying for them to develop the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Over it.
Yeah. That's just the gaming world has changed so dramatically in the past 5 to 7 years. You know, the whole DLC thing where it's like, you know, when you got the game, you got the game. Half done games that came with DLC later that you had to pay for. Then you have, you know, you have all this microtransaction crap. Then you, like, you know, you have the early, it's just the evolution of gaming and getting, milking gamers for as much money as they can. It's just
yeah,
but that's the world we live in. parallel.
I assume a lot of others, probably like you, I buy a lot of my games through the Steam sale, the majority, the mm-hmm. vast majority of my games through the Steam sale, which means that they're probably a little older, if sometimes just a year, 6 months to a year, something like that. And it's astounding to me how many times you load them up and immediately you're bombarded with, like, you don't have all these DLCs and you need to start paying for buying all these things. It's like, holy cow, did I not buy the game?
Yeah.
Like, what did I buy? Like, the access to buy in the game or what?
Yeah, it's just, it's really, yeah, it's bad these days. So yeah, I would not get that program unless you really want a game early and you have the money to spend it. But I still wouldn't. 5 days is 5 days. It's not a big deal.
It's just, what do you get? I guess that's the difference, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So coming up next week, on a lighter note, is that we'll be taking a look at our first X470 motherboard, which is the Asus Prime X470 Pro. It is, you know, I call this like the mainstream board. I've reviewed in a bunch of different chipsets this board for years. It's a solid board. It's a solid, like, this is where we're doing all of our Ryzen Gen 2 testing on. It's just a solid board overall.
This used to be the deluxe line?
This was for a while it was I did the Asus Z270A-A. It might have been the deluxe line or like the mainstream line, but it's called the Prime line now. Yeah. And this is basically what it is. Gives you all the solid features you want. A little bit of flash, not a lot. There is some RGB lighting on this, you know.
I like the design of the heatsinks. I think that those lines look good.
Yeah, and that, you know, you have the M.2 heatsink built in as well.
Yeah, that's a nice feature.
Solid board so far, no issues really. So I'll have that for you next week, and I'll be taking a look at one of those sit-stand desks. And this one comes from a company called Lander, who's actually, their factory is right by where you live.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes sense. This is this used to be the furniture capital of the world. So.
Yeah, so they contacted us, and we got a really cool desk. These are really high quality. They start at $1,000, so they're kind of out of the range of like a lot of the other ones that we reviewed that kind of start at like $299, $399.
Yeah, this looks like more of a professional version, just quickly scrolling through.
From my experience, I don't want to give too much away, much higher quality. Most of it is built for you, so the other ones take like a lot of assembly. And these are designed for like really like the office. I forget the certification that they have, but they have the certification like, so technically all the sit-stand desks that are motorized, that if you press a button, once you press the button, it goes up. You know what I mean? By itself. Yeah. They don't meet a certain certification that most businesses like need to have, like Google and all that kind of stuff. These ones, you have to hold the button, like have your finger on the button to move it up or down as part of that certification. So these have that. The quality is much better in these. And then there are some other features that are on these tests. It does have a mobile app too that allows you to, you know, do some cool things. Like, it allows you to program the remote. It allows you to move the desk up and down, obviously. But it allows you to do some things like stand for 5 minutes every half an hour or something like that. The desk will do for you. Stuff like that that you can do. And you can track how much you've been sitting, how much you've been standing. Cool stuff like that. So I really like that. The app is really, really cool. They have this process called 3D lamination. So the wood is laminated all the way around, like even around the curves. So there's no like breakage or whatever you want to call that around the,
no seam.
Yeah, there's no seam. So that's really cool. And that obviously helps with like breakage and things like that. It's just a really well done, really well made desk. So I've been using this, I've been using it at the office. It's really nice. I will have my full review. It's really good. But again, it is expensive, but I feel like you're getting what you pay for with this thing. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. And then Ryan will be checking out the Fantex Eclipse P350. This is sort of their value-oriented case. Has some RGB lighting on it. tempered glass side panel. It only comes with one fan. That's kind of what he was telling me. It's kind of
yeah. I was looking at that. I'm like, that thing's not gonna do anything.
Yeah.
Airflow is gonna be pretty minimal if you don't do any upgrading of your fan situation.
Yeah. So that is the thing. But I do like it. One of the more interesting things that I didn't really get to talk to him about it, but the hard drive bays come out of the front. You take off the front bezel down there. Yeah, I kind of like that, honestly, because I feel that it's still taking off a back side panel, especially when you have all your cables and crap back there.
I hate taking off my side panels.
Yeah, popping off the front seems easy enough, and to pull out a drive.
It's like a slot-loaded drive bay.
Yeah, I kind of like
that. It'd be really cool if they slid into, and I know they don't, especially not at this price range, but if those slid into like hot swappable connections.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that there wasn't cables attached to the drive. It just slid into a solid piece. That would be slick as hell.
Yeah. Whoever case manufacturers are, take notes, because I think that, that's one of the cool features of this. But overall, it's a value case, you know, so Ryan will be telling us about it and see if, see if he likes it. Or anything.
I'm like sure that. It's a well-designed and thought-out case, because I've yet to see one from Fantex that isn't, but if it's too value thought out, you might be missing some features.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely something, you know, like I said, we'll review next week and Ryan will tell you all about it.
Cool.
And that brings us to the end of the podcast here. We always talk about tech or gaming or things that we've been doing in that realm. Have you done anything cool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got myself a new camera.
I did see that. I saw that you got the Sony A7 III. Or they call it Mark III, or is it just III?
I just call it A7 III.
Or is it A7S III, or is it A7 III?
No, it's just A7 III.
Okay. What
the R3 would be the flagship. This was slightly below.
What actually, it's that, just a, that purchase.
It's just about time.
Yeah,
I think I'm 5 years into my A6000, maybe 6 years even.
And I still think that's a great camera.
It is.
It's a great camera for photos. It's a great camera for video still if you're doing 1080. Honestly, we used it. We used that camera at CES.
It's been a workhorse, honestly, and it's conveniently small. It's a great size, but it's not full frame. It's not full frame, and it doesn't have pro features.
Yeah, so what was
it doesn't have a lot of the pro features. So
what, tell us, what were the main features that, you know, you were looking, obviously, in this price range? This is $2,000 without just the body.
$2,000 for the body.
Yeah, so what were you looking for? What it has a USB 3.0 connection, even though you'll never use that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so what were those like pro features or some of the things that made you pick this over? I know you're in the Sony ecosystem, but like say over a Canon or a Nikon.
I'm in the Sony ecosystem, but because I'm going from a cropped sensor to full frame, none of my lenses are really use. You can use them. It is the same mount, but it'll crop everything. So really, why even bother? So it was like starting over. A lot of it came down to my cousin is a pro photographer and he shoots Nikon and just he's obsessed with the Sonys, to be honest.
That's awesome.
Even though he's a lifelong Nikon shooter, and it's just they're convenient, they're small, the future is in mirrorless. So it just makes sense to stay there. It's not a cheap ecosystem though.
No,
the Sony FE lenses are not cheap by any means.
What lens did you get with
the? Essentially, the kit lens is a 2870.
Okay.
It's a $400 lens. I got it for $200.
Nice.
Ordering it in the kit, so it's okay. It's not great glass. I took it out yesterday and shot, and I got some good images. But I'm definitely gonna be picking up two or three more lenses to go with
it. The 24-70 G Master looks sick, that lens.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to spend.
Yeah, it's a really expensive.
Dollars. Yeah. There's some other options that I'm going to probably get on first.
What is the?
Yeah, most of my budget was eaten up with the camera.
I know you're doing this mostly for photography. What does this shoot video wise?
4K 30.
4K 30, not 4K 60.
Yeah. No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Very cool. It's dual card. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That'll be a nice feature so that you don't lose your photos.
That old Sony camera, the video, specifically video camera that I had wanted for like years and then I just never bought. I'm kind of glad I never bought it. it had the dual card deal.
Yeah.
It was like their prosumer cool. video camera. That's cool. I'm just looking at the product page on Amazon right now.
I wish it had, what is it, compact flash? Is that the faster?
Yeah.
The pro standard. I do wish it had that because that would make things, when you are like collabing with people, like with Nikon and Canon shooters, it makes collabing with them a little easier because they're usually using those type of flash cards.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's a smaller body. You're going to lose things like that.
Yeah. Is the control and the menu system pretty much the same?
It's the same time and then add in like another third or more functions for what you're used to messing with. So yeah, I've not even like scratched the surface on setting the thing up
yet. Where did you buy this at Best Buy?
No, I got it from B&H Photo because I could get it there. The thing is basically sold out everywhere. It's been sold out.
Did you order online?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh well, yeah. It has a 92% rating.
Dude, so here's the thing.
On Amazon, that's pretty good.
I've always wanted the A7 R II, right, for years, and then the A7 R III comes out, and like I'm like, well, I want that. But then this A7 III comes out. It's $1,000 cheaper, and it's a 24.2 megapixel versus a 42 megapixel. So there's this obvious difference there. But that's about it. The A7 III has a better autofocus. It shoots better in the dark. And it's significantly cheaper. And there's a couple other things that were better about the A7 III that it was like, as much as I would like the 42 megapixel, because we do, you know, we shoot product photos mostly.
Yeah.
And that would come in handy-ish. We're not like quite at that like magazine level. We're not printing stuff out, you know. And I would like to. That would be really cool to get into doing. But I think at this point, it's just the size of the image files to handle. You know, to store when you go to 42 megapixels, it doubles basically. So it just doesn't make sense unless you're getting paid. I guess to me right now. Unless those photos are getting you money, like to spend that extra $1,000, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Plus this process is faster too, because it's so much less information.
Gotcha.
So
nice. Well, that's
although the R3 has the pixel shift thing that it does, where it takes like 10 42 megapixel photos, like it shifts slightly, and it creates a super dense image. That would have been really cool to play with.
Yeah. Still, that's awesome though. You know, I think it's a great camera. I'd be excited to see you kind of play with it when we go to CES and all that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, really looking forward to really getting comfortable with it. I'm going to South Carolina for help my cousin with a shoot in a couple of weeks, so
nice. I
have a chance to use it in a professional environment then.
Yeah, you'll have to let us know how it kind of works out and everything. What's the size difference between that and the...
like the physical size?
Yeah. Slightly bigger?
It's probably a third bigger.
Okay.
It's not... Honestly, it is real close. The outline of it is pretty close to a Nikon or a Canon body without... like the battery pack, because usually you see them with the battery pack.
Yeah,
But it's not as thick from front to back, so it cuts off there, and it's lighter. It's quite a bit lighter than a Canon or a Nikon.
Nice. Well, like I said, that's super exciting. I didn't make any purchase like that this week.
that one was a little bit of time building up to it. So
yeah, a lot of research, I assume too. So, I played a lot of Fortnite. This week,
yeah, I've been seeing a lot of posts about Fortnite.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Fortnite. It was like the 1 year anniversary, which is pretty interesting for them. So
I can't believe it's been a year, actually.
Yeah, 1 year it's anniversary, and they have a lot of, I guess you would call them quests or things to do with the 1 year, and just cool stuff, you know. So I've been playing a lot of that, and that's basically it. Just working on reviews here. Was like I said, had a lot of fun testing the Ryzen 7 2700X, and have some motherboards here. A lot of cool stuff here. So a lot of cool reviews coming. We're getting into that more busy time with a lot more products flowing in. So it should be exciting over the next year, month or so. So yeah. Nice. So that brings us to the end of the podcast here. As I always say, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So as we're talking about each product or each news article, you can click through and get even more information. And if you're looking for us on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app or website, it's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.